I was going to come down. I will in a moment. Wes and I are going to jointly offer some words that I hope are useful. But before we do that, I wonder what you think. I'm actually going to come down there for a moment because I feel too far away from you here. I just wonder what you guys think of this reading. So it's the Sermon on the Mount. And I don't know if you've followed the last few weeks, the Sermon on the Mount. We had the Beatitudes last week. I'm not sure if you spoke about that. The week before that was the disciples being called. This is a further, like we move further into the Sermon on the Mount with this reading. So that gives you a little bit of context. Jesus is still doing teaching on the mountain. So got any thoughts? What struck you about it?
I actually noticed reading it this morning that lining up, well, do it this way or
not? It's up to you.
Yeah. Lining up, the salt loses its saltiness. You can't make it salty again. And I always put that back onto the salt, you know, talking about the salt. And we're losing the essence or the light in us, light and salt in us. It's hard to get going again.
Oh,
so
I like that.
You say that we're dulling down, or we're getting further away from God, Jesus. You know, we're just going further away. It's hard. It's hard to go that bad because we used to talk it nowadays. You know, the road to Jesus, and the study that I'm doing is one story that leads to Jesus. So it's just all about
the whole thing leads to this.
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you, Cheryl. That's, you know, sometimes I wish that I could hear all of these things before I write anything. Anyone else had any thoughts? So would you like to hear some thoughts that Wes and I perhaps had? I might actually go back up here, if that's okay. No, what you said was lovely. Thank you, Cheryl. It's always hard to, when you're put on the spot, to think about, you know, what it means for you. So it's really appreciated that you were able to articulate that. So thank you so much. Okay, these are Wes and I's thoughts. And the first thing that I thought was Jesus is actually pretty smart, right? He always used demonstrations that people recognized. Salt and light are things that people recognized. It was so recognizable. But the Sermon on the Mount was radical. I don't know if we realize how radical it was. He's talking about a topsy-turvy kingdom that his followers were not used to hearing. And so that's like really topsy-turvy and really radical. And I'm not sure I actually appreciated that until I started really thinking and really, you know, thinking about what this reading means. as I mentioned, in a moment, Wes and I will be having a think about what about salt and light. However, I think it would be remiss of us to not acknowledge the rest of the reading. And I wonder if it was as difficult for you to hear as it was for me and to grasp. So here's some of my thoughts. I wonder if Jesus would say, your faith is only between you and God. I'm not so sure. To love God is to love your neighbour, to serve them, to work for justice. Righteousness doesn't mean being right, morally or otherwise. It means in right relationships. Faith is communal. As Paul says, we do not live to ourselves. We are salt and light for the world. I wonder if this challenges the notion of the essence of Christianity in believing in Jesus. When we listen to stories of how Jesus lived, I'm not sure he was into belief as a doctrine. The essence of Christianity, the saltiness of the salt, is loving your neighbour, right? For Jesus to believe isn't for Jesus to believe isn't about what you think, but how you trust. It's not about believing that something is true, but believing in it, giving your heart to it. Believing in God means trusting God's grace, which moves us to love our neighbours. Jesus showed us the law by living it. In this passage, he tells us we are already salt of the earth, light of the world. We already have it in us. We can live it out. And I wonder if the law is about living it out. And I might touch on that a little bit later, but for now, I think Wes has a bit to say about salt.
Thank you, Joe. And after our discussion, I looked at the technological things that we could do, which would help us to work out that. I went not Play Store, I went Kingdom Store and downloaded an app so I can read things about our congregation, all right? So I'm still new to it. I'm getting some readings. There's some salt, but it's getting mixed up with a lot of fruit and nuts. I'll just adjust it a little bit. All very salty in this spot. More salt, moles. It's very accurate, this meter. And I would say, I see salt at various levels in all of us. How good's that?
Yay!
Yeah.
That deserves a clap, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes.
Have you got a clap meter?
Oh, hang on, it's another setting. But leave that for now, I'm still learning. So what did Jesus mean about us being like salt? There's a few right answers. But if you're wrong, I'll go ba-bum. Aha! Bingo. One.
Without it, it can really taste quite bland.
So it can be a seasoning.
It can be.
That's right.
It makes things last longer.
It's a preservative.
Yes.
Someone give that girl a Freddo frog.
It cleans.
There's one other one. Cleans.
It cleans.
Yes, a disinfectant. Those are the three.
Yeah,
so in Jesus' time, salt was uber valuable.
Healing.
Yeah. Preservative healing, yes.
Yes, yes.
All of those things. In that time, salt was so valuable that they actually sometimes had, the Roman soldiers were paid in blocks of salt.
Is that serious?
Trust a trivia buff, eh? Allegedly. All right. So we've established three things. We're like salt because we're seasoning, preservative and disinfectant, but also we are so valuable. Now, one of the things that that struck me actually when we were researching and saying what Bible readings should we use, I looked at Old Testament, I looked at the Corinthians reading, anyway, and all of a sudden the psalm struck out, which never happens for me because I don't value them that highly. But just me. Thank you.
Did you really say that, Wes? Did you actually admit that in church?
Yeah. But thank you. But when we're talking about salt and what did Jesus mean, perhaps we were drawing some of the things that really... I'll repeat some of the lines that struck out to me. We are gracious and merciful, desiring harmony. That's what we are. Fearlessly generous. That's what salty people are. We are resolute in building justice. Oh, and this was my favourite. Anxious rumours don't budge us. You are our solid bedrock. And we share abundantly. We give to the poor. This is salty people. And he also, in the end, warns us not to lose our saltiness. Now, Cheryl touched on that, but my thoughts were when we lose our passion, when we lose a bit of our desire to do what's right, that's when perhaps we lose a bit of our saltiness. But that's enough. I said I'd go in and give a two-punch answer, and I'll be the...
Hey, Wes, have you... something I was actually just thinking about last night, which, so it's not written in yours, because I just thought about it last night. Have you ever done a float tank?
No.
Has anyone here ever done a float tank?
Matt did.
So I've done a float tank. Can you explain to everyone, would you mind explaining in a couple of words what a float tank is?
You're basically suspended in a solution made up of water and Epsom salts. You basically float in darkness.
So it's like a big container and you have a lid. So it's supposed to be dulling all your senses. And because you're floating in salt, you float. You cannot sink because it's got so much salt in the tank. And literally, there's literally no... It's as soon as you put the lid down, there's no... None of your senses are alive. It's completely dark, completely silent. It's a very odd feeling. And you want to sleep, but... I don't know if you wanted to sleep, but I wanted to sleep. But I kept thinking, I don't want to sleep. This is the most bizarre place to sleep. But what I was thinking was, because of that, it's a buoyancy, right?
Mm.
So salt, actually, it's a buoyancy. So I was just thinking about that last night.
Another one.
So anyway, lots to think about for that. My job is light. He's done his job. I took some of his job. So in Jesus' day, light was also very, very important. I wonder why. Why do you think light was so important in Jesus' day? They didn't have electricity. They lived by the sun. So as soon as the sun went down, what happened? They slept. They slept in the dark of night. The light was they had for nighttime was candles or the fire, and they used it for cooking and warmth. So it was very, very important. I've been thinking about light this week, and I know Inika's talked about it. I know most ministers, when they stand up here, will talk about, you know, we can't, you know, if we light a candle, we can actually share someone else's light, and we can light someone else's candle, and it doesn't extinguish our own. And I know Inika speaks it very well. Have you got words to that, Inika? Because, you know, when I try to say it, it doesn't sound quite right. But when you light someone else's candle, you don't need to extinguish your own to light that person's. The other thing is, if it was an evening time and we all had a candle, and someone's candle went out, what do you think would happen? Not much, really. We wouldn't see it, would we? Except for the person beside us, the other person. What if all of a sudden the air conditioner blew everybody's candle out? It would become dark. So what is our job? Our job is to notice. Notice. And it doesn't cost us anything. It doesn't cost us to light someone else's, does it? But all of a sudden, if a lot of candles are out, we notice. So I just want to kind of leave you with that thought. Carrying light around back in Jesus' day wasn't easy. Obviously, there was no head torches. We didn't have phones. There was none of that. No electricity. So when Jesus talks to his followers about bringing light to the world, they actually understood it as something really, really important. To help people see in the dark is a gift. So I don't know about you, but when you're in, like what I was talking about before, in that tank, the float tank, it is really dark. There's no light. There's no sound. There's nothing. You can't see the hand, your hand in front of your face. It's there, but it's not there. And it's scary. It's actually pretty scary when you cannot see. So to use light to open that darkness brings a whole new element of your senses alive. Imagine doing that for someone else. We often use candles in church to pray, don't we? And we light it from the Christ candle. So all our energy, where do we get our energy? We get our energy from Christ candle, the light of the world. So we always have to light ours from that. And that's how we bring energy around to everything else. I wonder what it means to not hide it under a bushel. I wonder what the bushel is. What's the bushel? A basket? I wonder what you make of that.
It's a measure.
It's a measure? Covering up the light? Can we use it as a symbol, like a symbolic? So I wonder today what our bushel is. I wonder what our bushel is as an individual, as a community here in Endeavour Hills, Uniting Church. I wonder what our bushel is in our region, Casey Cardinia.
I guess if we know something, but don't speak up, don't act on it.
Thanks, Olive. Yeah, that's what I was wondering too. Yeah, so did everyone hear that? Olive was saying, I wonder if it's not speaking up when someone's trying to oppress you, something is trying to oppress, we don't speak up. I wonder if that's a bushel. I heard the other day about when I was listening to some podcasts about this, someone saying, don't let anyone ever snuff out your light. Don't let anyone be your bushel. I love that. Stand up for justice. And I'm sure there's many of you in this room that need to stand up for justice. So I'm going to quote, and I've already spoken to Susan about this, I'm going to quote the great Matt Harry, who all of you know. What you might not know is that I used to worship at Hampton Park many, many years ago, and Matt Harry was the minister there. And he said something that has always, always stuck with me. You know when someone says something to you and for some reason it sticks? This is something Matt said once in one of his worship services. He said, Jesus isn't about nice. Not once in the Bible does it talk about not being nice. And that's really stuck with me. You can tell them that, but don't let them get a big head. Or big her head. I wonder what that means. Are we called to be nice? We're not. And you know, I remember before Matt said that, it was like, I'm a nice person. I'm sure we're all nice people. But does that mean we let others just walk on us and cover our light? No. Being nice sometimes is hard. Loving sometimes is really hard, right? I'm probably talking way too long. So I'll just leave you with a couple of thoughts. Being salt and light is about offering love. And sometimes that's actually really hard work. It's about standing in the gap for others when they cannot stand in that gap. And when it's our turn to be vulnerable, we have someone standing in the gap for us. I wonder if what Jesus is teaching us is about doing this, when we love, we are following the law. You might have a different take on that, but that's the way I'm interpreting this, that by doing it, by living it, we are actually living the law. It's not about how many times we pray or how often we attend church, but by being the love, shining the light, and not being afraid of all the bushels around us. Offering healing, offering the type of seasoning that only Jesus' love can spice. When we do this, we stand out, we illuminate, and something is different. Light illuminates what is already there. It shows things for what they really are. I wonder if we get so caught up in the legalistic issues that we actually miss the point sometimes. I also wonder if this is a lifelong lesson, that our light perhaps shines a little brighter each time we practice offering it to others. This week, I invite you to actively look for ways in which you can shine your light.